Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a look at a social experiment without a purpose. Three summers ago, maybe you remember, maybe you were involved, strange gatherings started taking place in public places around New York. Spontaneous crowds would suddenly materialize, perform some kind of act in unison, and then disappear just as suddenly. They started here in New York City, but they quickly spread throughout the country and eventually to every continent in the world, save Antarctica. These so-called flash mobs were highly organized and were a galvanizing force among an often apathetic young adult population. But by definition, they had absolutely no point. They're called flash mobs, and their creator was only known as Bill, who worked in the culture industry. Other than that, his identity remained a mystery, but he has now revealed himself as the inventor of flash mobs in the latest issue of Harper's Magazine, where he is a senior editor, and he joins me now, Bill Wasik. Welcome to WNYC, Bill.
Thanks, Ryan.
For the uninitiated, tell us a little bit more about what a flash mob is, or since you've declared them dead in the article, what a flash mob was.
Well, a flash mob is it's basically an absurd gathering of people for 10 minutes or less. That's basically the only definition. And part of the reason it spread so quickly was that I think everybody heard about the idea and thought, you know, about some fun flash mob that they could see themselves doing. And that's part of the reason I think it spread from city to city.
Give us some examples of actual flash mobs and what they did.
Well, for example, here in New York, probably our biggest flash mob was on the second floor of the Times Square Toys R Us. Anybody who's been there will know that there's this giant life-size animatronic Tyrannosaurus Rex that, you know, faints and growls at the customers. And we sort of infiltrated the second floor, and then at the appointed time, we all swarmed right in front of the T-Rex and got down on our knees and moaned like it was some sort of terrible god. And then, you know, then after 10 minutes, we got up and left. Yeah.
Well, that was fun. What's another one?
Let's see. Another one. I'll try to think of one from another city. San Francisco did some fun mobs. They had one where when people coming off of the public transit system, they had rolled out a red carpet in front of the BART station and applauded on either side as people walked off it. It was a little bit more of a mob with a kind of a touchy-feely message. Mine were a lot more dark.
And it became enough of a real thing that the term flash mob actually found itself in the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, the latest edition, which defines it as, quote, a public gathering of complete strangers organized via the internet or mobile phone who perform a pointless act and then disperse again, unquote. So I guess they got it about right, huh?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, I wonder about the wisdom of including it now, because pretty much by the time they added it to the dictionary, the fad had basically dissipated.
And you write in the article that this was intended as, quote, a metaphor for the hollow hipster culture that spawned it. So were you out to kind of mock people by seeing what you could get them to do that was pointless?
Well, it was more mocking sort of social forces that draw people to certain fads. So really, if there was any mockery involved, it was a lot of self-mockery too, because I see those same kinds of forces in myself, you know, like a lot of people who live in New York or who live in cities or you know, people who try to follow culture. There's this nagging question in the back of your mind about, well, what's the next thing I should be excited about? Well, you know, there's this new band or there's this new book, and I heard about this comedy show or this reading that I don't necessarily have any reason to think is any good, other than that it seems like everybody else likes it. And so part of what I was trying to satirize is the process by which things get picked up by the culture and then, you know, get discarded. And so the idea was, let's make the next big thing, you know, let's make the show that everybody wants to go to, except the joke is that there's no show, that yes, you're the show just by showing up. And there was a whole self-conscious dimension of it too. So, you know, there was, in the emails that I forwarded around, to everybody about the project, it said there was a frequently asked questions section, and it had one question, which was, why would I want to join an inexplicable mob? And the answer was, tons of other people are doing it. So self-consciously there, that joke was there for everybody.
So I'm curious if we have any of those tons of other people listening right now. If you ever joined a flash mob, give us a call. Are you embarrassed about it now, especially hearing how Bill Wasik describes it as this kind of big goof with an overarching social point? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I guess using the pointlessness of the individual events to make an overarching social point. 212-433-9692. If you've ever been in a flash mob, or if you just want to talk about it or ask a question of Bill Wasik, now out as the founder of Flash Mobs, as he reveals in the latest Harper's, where he is a senior editor. 212-433-9692. Why did you do this anonymously?
Because I had an intuition, which I think in retrospect was right, that if I came out and said, here I am, you know, Bill Wasik, you can Google me and you can see, you know, he works at this particular place. He, you know, these are certain concrete things that he's associated with. Then there would be all these questions about, you know, what are his specific purposes in starting it? And I didn't want that. I wanted people to get these emails as if they sort of came from the collective consciousness of the internet, and that when people forwarded them along, it was as if they were taking this kind of viral project on as their own. And so I only came out as Bill just because I had to do interviews and, in order to spread the project. I had this motto that anything that grows the mob is pro-mob. I was trying to basically make the thing grow as fast and as large as possible. And so that was why I came out just as Bill. But that's the reason I was mostly anonymous.
By the way, there's a bit of prehistory to flash mobs, which actually goes to one of my radio heroes, Gene Shepard. Mm-hmm. Instigated the first, and I don't know if he called them flash mobs, but he might have, back in the early 60s, way before I was listening to him, but they were known as millings, and he would send listeners to vacant lots in the middle of the night to the befuddlement of the police. And that was all there was to it.
That's great. I've never heard about that. I mean, there have been, it's funny, there had been a whole history of, you know, you could talk about absurd gatherings, you know, going back to the yippies or the, you know, the situationists and all that sort of thing. I mean, the term flash mobs was new for this trend that we had in 2003, but that's actually one of the closest precursors that I've heard of, in that there literally was no point. And also the people who were doing it were just his listeners, right? They didn't have any relationship to each other, which is another thing that – I mean, people have had these kinds of absurd gatherings in the past, but they've been more sort of like a group of people who know each other coming out and sort of putting on some sort of a show. The other thing about flash mobs that I liked was that – it was really just you saw how far out the email would go, and then it would grab people, and then they would all come together, but they didn't have any relationship to each other. It was basically like taking this virtual community and making it physical, making it literal.
Now, if you want to know a side effect of what you spawned here, I think Steve in Manhattan might have it, because he's a police officer. Hi, Steve. You're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
It's a pleasure. I love listening to your show.
Thanks a lot.
I really want to meet him and shake his hand. Several years ago, we got a call. We got a frantic call, actually, that a riot was about to ensue. We showed up, and, of course, nobody was there. And the people that were left were just kind of perplexed. And in there, you know, and us taking the information, well, what did you see? Well, we saw a mob. And what did they do? Well, they just moaned and chanted. Well, and then what? They left. And, you know, we all had to keep a straight face, but when we got back, we were hysterical. Like, we didn't even know how to write this up. You know, it was like we were starting to question whether the people, but there were so many people that said the same thing. We started comparing notes, and every quote-unquote witness basically said they came, they saw, they left. And you want us to do what about that? You know? It was quite funny, and then over time I've heard more. I was excited. I actually would have loved to have been a participant. I think it's a wonderful, it's a frightening comment about our society that we live in. But it was really interesting to get the viewpoints of people watching the event and thinking they saw something wrong, but then couldn't really say what was wrong, other than it was a mob.
and the taxpayers were paying you and your fellow officers to respond to this. So, Bill,
I had to write that up. I mean, there are stacks of papers and reports about the mob that never was.
Now that could be the sequel to your article.
No, that's that. I would love to. I'd love to get my hands on those papers.
Government documents. Steve, thanks for a great call. Call us again. Buzzy on the New Jersey Turnpike. You're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hello. About a couple of years ago, I got an email that to meet in the PATH station of the World Trade Center and start reciting the First Amendment over and over, and then eventually we would all do it in unison, and then. First, and I did that, and I never knew any of the people, and I never met any of them again. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and that's the First Amendment flash mobs were organized by this man named the Reverend Billy, and he has this organization called the Church of Stop Shopping. And that's interesting because that's one of the few examples of people really trying to take the flash mob idea and use it for a political point.
I mean, give it a point.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they had just been sort of absurd fun, and they were making this larger point sort of about social trends, but the events themselves weren't making any kind of a point. The Reverend Billy's group has been doing those First Amendment flash mobs to try to do that. I'm skeptical, as I write in the article, about the political uses of flash mobs, but I do think it's neat that they're trying it.
Buzzy, thanks for your call. It reminds me that I saw on boingboing.com yesterday, they're selling this luggage strapping tape, boingboing.net, I should say, where they're selling this strapping tape that has the Fourth Amendment printed on it, you know, unreasonable search and seizure for your luggage. So you're forcing the police to tear the Fourth Amendment in half in order to open your luggage if they want to inspect your bag. Mary in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Don't tell me you were at a milling.
Yes. And I was annoyed when I first heard about flash mobs that nobody gave credit to Gene Shepard.
Ta-da.
We went not to an empty lot, but to the Needix that is or was in the corner of Macy's.
Okay.
I don't know whether you're familiar with that.
Before my time, but go ahead.
For years they held out, and it was just, you know, let's all go to the Needix at 6 o'clock or at 9 o'clock, or I think it was 11, actually, later at night. And it must have been in the late 50s, early 60s. And that was it.
And that was it, and you did it, and you left, and what did you get out of it?
Just a funny thing. The funny looks on the faces of the people in Needix, I guess.
Mary, thank you. Was Gene Shepard there or no?
Yes.
Wow. He showed up. He actually showed up.
Oh, sure.
Thanks a lot for your call. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Did the flash mob phenomenon have a purpose? Ultimately, looking back on it now, when your obituary is written, you know, there was George Clooney up there at the Oscars the other day. Well, now when they write my obituary, they could say Oscar, you know, when they write your obituary and say inventor of the flash mob, how'd that make you feel?
If anybody writes my obituary, I'll feel pretty good about it. But did they have a purpose? I mean, yeah, they did have a purpose as a kind of social comment that sort of turned into a very ephemeral piece of performance art in a way.
Yeah. I mean, you're right about the old Milgram psychological studies, right, where people would follow ridiculous orders because of a tendency to follow authority.
That's right. And he, you know, as I write about in the piece, he was dogged his whole life by these questions about whether he had sort of damaged his subjects psychologically. You know, a lot of people felt like he was this kind of monster. But he, you know, made a great point in this letter exchange that I cite in the piece about how one of his subjects, you know, after realizing that he could be driven to commit these barbaric acts, became a conscientious objector from Vietnam.
And Bill, that has to be the last word. Bill's article outing himself as the creator of flash mobs is in this month's Harper's. And we go out with something from the BBC, a flash mob opera that the Beeb organized. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Brian.
This is from Paddington Station in London.
Fall in love.
Ha 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 ha. at the gates of hell to bouncers. Messes, never tis and vain.